Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 9, Episode 11, titled Bounty. Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I mean, it's honestly a great episode. I can think of very little things that are flaws within it. There's a couple points where I thought, oh boy, they're going to do something dumb here, and they didn't. Yeah, I thought there was going to be, they're going to shit on Ezekiel's campaign to restore human dignity and creativity by, I don't know, killing Jerry or sacrificing substantial Bo girl. As soon as I found that she had a name, Diane, I'm like, yeah. Oh, damn,
Dumb.
Girl.
Forget about
damn.
It.
Damn. You had a competition to win in the upcoming Renaissance Fair, and now it's all gone like tears in the rain, and they didn't do it. But there was still like really nice stakes. Like I feel like they did a really good job of introducing the new villain and the new the head villain character, the Alpha, as like really just a loathsome character who is like stands in opposition against everything that our heroes hold dear. And there's a legit moral dilemma, and there's some like Daryl Dixon spitting wisdom that actually had me going like, wow, damn, you know. That's some words to live by nowadays. I posted this unironically yesterday to my Twitter that like The Walking Dead Season 9 has become something of a beacon of hope for me in this summer bummer. Like
a path through the apocalypse? Like
what? Yeah. Like, you know, life sometimes is just shit.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do but live with it. That's some shit you can take to the bank. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I liked it too. All the things you said, I definitely felt too. And I think like the way that they economically dealt with the Lydia situation, I this is something that could have easily dragged on and on. They could have just said, "Nah, come back later. We got to think it over with Lydia." But no, they just made the decision and they executed. And I think it's so uncharacteristic of Walking Dead to do that. That I sort of found myself surprised by it pleasantly.
They laid the tracks right up too. Because yes, last episode we talked about how like you know when you have these situations with the abuser, when the fact that she shows up, you know, more to reclaim her possession than out of any kind of love or loyalty to her daughter, that's going to be misinterpreted by the abusee as like a change of heart or abuse. And it exactly played out like we thought. And what I thought was an amazing grace note is Daryl saw it all. You could see it on his face that he could see this playing out and he understood what was going on and got it.
Yeah.
But like, they
made that point, you know, even in this episode, but also in many others about, you know, he's a survivor of abuse himself. And so he should get these things. And the fact that he does is, like I said, pretty uncharacteristically Walking Dead.
No, it's really good. I don't know. Maybe it happens even better in the books. But if so, I'm glad I didn't read them because I'm really invested in what they're doing here.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we should get into the recap then. I couldn't help but notice there was a warning at the beginning of this, which included smoking, which I thought was hilarious because the other things it puts in there are violence, language, nudity, and gore. That seems a bit of a false equivalency to me, but okay, sure.
Is there smoking in this episode? Who's smoking?
I don't even remember who's smoking.
Oh, see, that's how effective the smoking propaganda is. I didn't even notice
Maybe it's just a generic warning that gets put on all of them, and I'm just now noticing it, but yeah, I thought it's funny.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
So we start out with Jerry spitting his gum out to tell Ezekiel and Carol that his woman is pregnant. They're having a baby. And they congratulate him. And then Tara and Jesus ride up on horses, revealing, oh, the scene is actually a flashback. And Tara says she stole some supplies from Alexandria, so she can't go home. She gives some of her bounty to Ezekiel, the multi-community charter of freedom and rights, I think it's called, that she wrote up before she became disillusioned. And then back at the kingdom sometime later, a competent bow girl, rather, tells Ezekiel, or substantial bow girl, I'm sorry, that there
are... she's competent, too, after this episode. We can call her substantial and competent.
For sure. There are 100 elk nearby that they can hunt, but they've only got 6 hours to get them before the dead do. And then Carol says, hey, I'm coming along on that hunt.
Yeah. I thought this flashback scene was really sweet. You know, there, we know there's always been an affection between Ezekiel and Jerry, but to see like Ezekiel genuinely light up and, you know, even in his pseudo Shakespearean mode, you are the biggest hearted among us all. Should really do something about that, Jerry. Enlarged hearts can kill a man of your size.
Inflammation.
I like it. And even like some of the stuff that I might roll my eyes with on a worse episode, like when he goes to pat Ezekiel on the back and he's got his rechewed gum right there, that, you know, I can't really hold it against the show.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry is a source of comedy relief, and that's fine.
Yeah, it is. Speaking of other things that used to be annoying on The Walking Dead that they're no longer trafficking in, is when that tube came out and they develop, I'm like, oh God, are they going to make this some kind of mystery that's going to pay off later in the season?
What's in the tube? They don't. What's in the tube? Yeah.
What kapot is it's a family painting. It's the map of the future. It's barley equals intellect. It's fucking a big life-size card that says PPP. What could it possibly be? It's the multi-community charts of charter of rights and freedoms that Michonne's been working away on. I was intrigued because, you know, this is one of the things I was very interested in, like, you know, this post-apocalyptic reforming society, reforging justice, reestablishing the concepts of liberty and freedoms and whatnot. That would be really fascinating. And I think that I was able to go on the internet and find a full text copy of the charter's rights and responsibilities. Do you think it'd be interesting to go through those, or should we do that like at the end of the episode, or...
I mean, I think it's weird because we're recording these, you know, a year and a half after the show has already aired it or whatever.
But a large portion of our audience fucked off of the show the same time we did. So we have
kind of a
unique opportunity here.
I had it in my notes to go find this thing. I just didn't have time. So I'm kind of curious if you want to read some of it at least.
Yeah, I do, because I thought that, well, let's just get into it, because they start with a preamble, just like our Constitution and like a mini compacts of its sort, too. And it starts with the statement that, like, any person who would live in peace and fairness and would find common ground, this is your world by right. And there's a lot of specific language talking about the change of the world because of, you know, the zombie virus. For example, first article says, we believe that people have the right to live as long as we can. So that's like the foundational rights, because, you know, after, you know, the death is fucking bullshit.
Okay. I'm thinking 200 years in the future, the court systems are going to be interpreting that law.
Well, so article two is the days of fury are over. Apparently, this is the what they called the times of Negan. Solitary confinement. There's no longer can kill people. Solitary confinement is the ultimate sanction that this document lays out in article two. Okay. So what they're doing to Negan, that is the capital punishment of its time. There's also article three is about essentially celebrating differences amongst each other. Like we live with and love people who are different. We believe different things, have different backgrounds, and celebrate them. We agree no one can be forced to change to make their neighbor more comfortable. We are a community of equals. Everyone has a right to be themselves. We do not make it this far so that any person who stands with us is looked down upon or hated for who they are, what they believe, or who they love. No one can be forced to pay tribute or worship another person ever. I thought this is the first this sounds awful good. Okay, so it's like we're essentially going to banish bigotry. We're going to make it a crime. But no one can be forced to pay tribute. This is taxation equals theft. This is music to those people's ears.
I mean, there are a myriad of problems with everything I'm hearing here. The sentiment I like, but the legality of it, oh boy, that's going to be challenged in court.
And then I feel like maybe they should have gotten a real lawyer to look over this because a real lawyer was supposed to have written it. And I get it. Right. You don't want like your constitution to be like minutia and legalese and parties of the third, fourth, width, then thus. But like there are some truck size holes to drive through here. And maybe that's part of the problem. Like, you know, maybe that's why the communities have kind of gone to their corners because, you know, someone's like, I can't be forced to pay tribute. So fuck, I'm not going to. You know, these are my tomatoes. These are my cans of beans, whatever. Mm-hmm. Number four, article four, we survive, but this is about more than survival to the world we are consecrating. Everyone has a right to think for themselves, the right to speak and be heard. There will be disagreements, but we will not allow them to become violent. We respect each other in life too much for that. It's self-evident to us that no one has a monopoly on truth or justice. Any person who joins us must accept our belief in human dignity. We strive for unity, but accept differences. Everyone has the right to leave and risk life on the open road, but our communities reserve the right to decide who our members are. So there's like this kind of free association, but not violence. But like, obviously this, if anyone disagrees is free to hit the open road, but what if they don't want to, you know, what if someone just wants to hate their neighbor, but also doesn't want to go out there and do the zombies? Are you going to
solitary confinement?
Yeah, and also, like, there will be violence, and I'm sure, like, people, you know, like, the state still has a monopoly on violence, so I don't know. There's a lot of, this articles 3 and 4 is a lot of double talk and stuff that sounds good in theory, but in principle, how will it work out? Five is everyone gets due process. People are secure in their property and their persons. We own ourselves only. We know that living together means sacrifices, but those sacrifices are made knowingly and willingly and are shared by all people of good faith. And he says, while we celebrate and cherish the rights of the individual, our general welfare comes first. I mean, it's wild that they're enshrining into their chart. Yeah, but they're enshrining into the Constitution the very battles that we're having right now. And it's like literally both sides. Like, well, everyone's secure in their own property, but general welfare comes first.
Right.
I mean, that's a hard problem to resolve.
And if you don't like it, hit the road, I guess.
Yeah. And we'll force you to.
Yeah.
Every community, Article 6, every community can decide how they want to live. We decide how to share, how to serve, how to sacrifice. But every community should be self-sustaining. No community can be forced to pay. The living are in league of friendship and will strive to solve problems as needed.
So extrapolate this. No global trade whatsoever. No trade outside of the communities.
It's voluntary. Or what's wild is Tara delivers this tube containing the charter, also saying that she stole the common property from Alexandria and is going to essentially ask for political asylum in Hilltop for her betrayal.
Yeah.
Like, what if Alexandria wants to prosecute her for this crime? You know, what?
Come get her.
And I'm like, is this show might be smart enough now to understand all these contradictions and might set to resolving them.
That would kind of be amazing, but I don't think that's... Look, the people who are still watching this show are not the people who want to see the letter of the law carried out to its inevitable logical conclusions.
But you look at some of these stances of Michonne and whatnot, and I can see like a lot of these fractures are in this document. And I wonder if there's going to be some kind of, at the end of this whole Whisperer's arc, if there's going to be a whole bunch of amendments to this or refines everyone can, because there's another thing at the bottom I want to get to. So Article 7 is, Article 6 lays out that if a general council is called, which is a council of all the communities, each community will provide a single representative to meet at a place to be determined. Each representative has one vote. That seems interesting that, like, if you do have, and they outline here in, like, Episode 7, I like this one a lot. Beyond humanity and life itself, we share a common bond. We're all infected with the virus that robs death of its dignity. We've seen what it does to loved ones, to friends and family. Do we not wish to join the ranks of the walking dead? But we know that one day we will unless corrective action is taken. And it outlines that everyone has a duty to essentially destroy the brain of someone who dies so that they do not return as a walker.
Okay, I like that. It solves the conundrum, you know, like, oh, but that's my mom, the Shaun of the Dead thing, right?
Right, like this is like the highest law of the land says that you have to, I thought that was pretty interesting. And it's the kind of stuff that I thought, you know, like the changing of the funerary customs and whatnot in this world, I think would be interesting. And also it shows like, who did it? Was it Aaron that ritually knifed Jesus in the head once he was pronounced dead?
I think it was Aaron, yeah.
Like, you're starting to see the influence of these laws codified. And then finally, 8 is, this is the war powers article. Bound by a common trust, life, and our humanity, we're making the world new again. We're making the world bigger by collaborating and cooperating. We're helping one another and defending one another so that we can all be safe. But this charter is not a suicide pact. No community can be forced to sacrifice supplies or people needed for self-preservation to save another. War will never be declared without joint agreement of all. Does that mean it's like a UN Security Council? All the communities have to agree to go to war, or none of them? Or I guess if there isn't a formal declaration of war, then no community can be compelled to support that effort?
I suppose so. Man, the Sanctuary must have read that and been like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Each community may opt out if they are so able. If war comes or some other emergency threatens our joint or individual survival as communities, the above rights and freedoms can be suspended
by the communities
elected or appointed leadership until the danger has passed.
No. Recipe for disaster right there.
It seems like it.
You either believe these things or you don't.
So the postamble then says, created under unanimous agreement of all the communities of this new world with hope for the future and confidence that we are together or stronger. Under one common accord, we sign our names below. And it has three communities listed: Alexandria, Kingdom, Oceanside.
Yeah.
The notable exceptions here are Hilltop and Sanctuary.
Which get added later in the episode.
They do?
Yeah, Ezekiel unrolls it somewhere else in the episode, and you can see that they've been added.
Oh, okay. So maybe this, interesting.
But they must have been added by Ezekiel, right? Because Tara steals this and gives it to him, and so he just, like, adds himself in Sanctuary.
I thought that was going to be a smoking gun. Like, oh, what's the intrigue that the, you know, Hilltop and all that stuff, and, you know, is maybe Maggie brought on board because Tara, gave him this much-needed medicine. I don't know. But it's interesting because you've also got this document, but also if it can be overrided just by someone deciding, some senior member of the council deciding, well, we're family, so fuck it. Mm. You know, Alexander didn't want to give up this antibiotics, and she stole it. So I'm very curious to see how this all goes down, how this ties into the scars on Michonne and Daryl's back.
And the timing of it all is still up in the air because, like, you know, Hilltop was Maggie's thing probably at this time, and so I'm wondering, like, what, you know, why is the Hilltop not on there, and what was the relationship between Maggie and her community and Michonne and their community?
yeah Yeah, I agree. I just, to the extent that this becomes a part of the show, I'd really do. It'd be so cool, I think, for the next season and a half or so to make this document be edited and modified and like shored up, because I just think it's, you know, this could be like Star Trek gets a lot of mileage out of the Prime Directive and the moral and ethical dilemmas that puts under like Starfleet personnel. I would love, I mean, it's a very simple document, has 8 articles. It would be really cool for those to become, you know, dilemmas that could maybe illuminate problems in our own society, maybe.
It's hilarious.
A dark version of Star Trek.
It's hilarious to me how often the Prime Directive conflicts with the scenario at hand. And that's one rule. If you had 8 different articles that you were trying to get to all mesh in any given scenario, it would get chaotic. It's going to get insane.
There are now 8 Prime Directives that are mutually, contradictory.
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting.
Try to organize a society around it.
I do want to see what they do with this, if anything. They do show it. Like, you can read it on screen if you want. So,
and they got to know that the super fans would be doing just what we did.
Exactly.
Someone transcribed this thing and is pouring over it. So,
yeah. All right. That was scene one. Scene two. The Whisperers are still at the gate. Alpha asks for her daughter. Daryl tells her to leave before she gets hurt. So Alpha calls in like 20 more dudes. I was not impressed with the numbers she called in. The threat was not real for me until they brought out Luke and Alden. But
they got that. And the true threat is the dead itself. And I'm guessing that next episode, they're just going to ram the dead right down the Hilltop's throat and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
All right, so then we find out that the blacksmith spilled molten metal on his arm, and Enid is treating his wounds. His wife wants him to retire, but he refuses. Afterward, his wife, Brett Butler, tells Enid not to lose hope over finding Alden, and then Enid finds out that the Whisperer's at the gate.
With Boston Rob in tow, apparently.
I don't think they brought him out yet, but yes, he's there somewhere. He's back behind the corn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Daryl says he isn't interested in sending the girl back to her mother, even when she threatens them, and he goes outside the gate to talk with her. It's all kind of just,
which is funny because she asks who the leader of the community is, and I thought Tara was going to stand forward, but in fact, Daryl says, why the fuck does it matter? And then he is the one that goes forth and deals. So it's like,
yeah.
This government is very fluid. Very fluid is, and that probably suits it, honestly, but like that's something that's going to have to be fixed forward.
It's amazing to me that there has not been seemingly a formal power structure here. Established. Mm-hmm. Jesus was just kind of the de facto leader, it seems. And then we assumed Tara would be the de facto leader after that. But yeah, I mean, look,
well, Jesus was
Daryl
formally
knows
elected.
What's up.
Yeah.
Like Daryl, you know, has talked with Lydia, understands the situation. I'm not sure that Tara even knows much about what's going on there. And so it makes a certain amount of sense that he would be the one to come out here and talk with Alpha. But yeah, Tara is the leader of this community, in my opinion.
I wonder if this is going to undermine Tara's authority, because they already had like Brett Butler putting her on notice, like, hey, we're going to look to you for justice. Mm-hmm. And if Daryl's the one doing all the justice dispensing and said, like, I wonder, you know, even though he doesn't want to be the leader, I wonder if this is going to start applying pressure on him that he has to kind of step up, because.
Yeah, could be.
You know, he is undermining Tara's authority, whether he wants to or not.
So we go back to Ezekiel's group, and it's after the hunt. They've caught a couple of elk. Ezekiel tries to send Carol back to camp alone because he's got this side mission that he wants to go on, which is she decides she wants in, and we find out that he takes her to a movie theater infested with zombies because he wants this theater projector bulb.
It's a side quest, Jim. They always bog you down.
Yeah, he needs to just stay on the main mission, you know, to finally like get in there and defeat the dragon and then go back and do the side quests. Come on, Ezekiel.
Yeah, but the horde might cut him off from the theater forever. And what the fair is just around the corner. I haven't got a good fix on the date. Is it like, did they say it was this coming weekend or the weekend after that? Or
I mean,
it's imminent.
It's episode 11, so we have 5 more episodes before the fair. 4 more.
They got the decorations up. You know. Uh-huh. There's a lot of stuff happening. The super bus has been formed.
Yeah, they moved the buses together.
It's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of time.
Daryl meets with Alpha and threatens to blow them all away. And then he hears this baby crying, a whisperer baby, and he's like, "What the fuck?" And she says, "Hey, animals have babies. We're animals, and we live out here, so we got a baby out here." Mm-hmm. And then she proposes a trade of Alden and Luke for her daughter.
The Luke's zombie mask.
Yes, thank you. Holy shit!
It's the Cabbage Patch version of a zombie mask. It's hilarious.
Yeah. It looks like a garbage pail kid for sure.
Like, look, we get Luke is a hefty man. You got to give him the fat zombie mask. Come on, man.
Yeah. Like, how'd you even find? I don't get it. How'd you find a face with those dimensions? Because it doesn't fit him. Yeah, he's big, but it doesn't fit him. It's too wide. It's too squat. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty funny though. It does. Yeah. Garbage pail. There you go. It's the cursed version of Cabbage Patch for sure.
Definitely.
But I don't know. Alpha's making compelling arguments. Two of yours for one of ours. That's a good trade.
Oh yeah. That's an offer.
And
they can't
she knows
refuse.
It. Right. Right. I mean, it's unpalatable for a lot of different reasons, but it is the right thing to do.
It's really only unpalatable to Henry and slightly to Daryl, because nobody else gives a shit about this Lydia girl, right? Nobody's had conversations with her. They're not survivors of abuse. Like, they just want their people back, the people they know and love.
But this is the beginning, like, you know, this is what gets, like, our country in trouble. Like, when our interests are not aligned with our ideals. Like, we just sure. read that, like, anyone that what was the preamble? Anyone who would live in peace and fairness would find common ground. This is the world by right. Well, Lydia at the end of the episode got to that point. Mm-hmm. So, like, do they have an obligation to protect such an individual?
Well, they don't. It's written into their constitution. They get to choose who their community members are. So
that's true. Like, these principles are, but yeah, like, unless they've actually formally joined the community, I guess you're right legally. That, but there again, there's the gap between the ideals and the interest is what always gets nation states in trouble. And I don't think the Hilltop's going to be any different, especially since apparently you're going to have a lot of the community badasses just going rogue to settle scores at the end of this episode anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, this is where leverage meets reality, I guess. You know, they've got two of their people. They want them back. Like, what can they do here? I think they make the right call, ultimately. So Zeke wants this projector bulb from the theater. Carol thinks it's not worth the risk, but he pitches her on it with a community morale argument, and she eventually comes around. They play some radio as a distraction and then to lure the walkers away, and then they go inside. They don't immediately find any bulbs, but they do find a lot of walkers in a theater, and they continue on to the projector room looking for the bulb.
Yeah, I really like this because Carol's got the pragmatic argument that, like, you know, you're sending fathers and mothers to their death, but then undercutting her, fathers and mothers stood up and been like, you know what? We don't want to just survive. We want to thrive. And part of that is having culture and arts and, you know, Jerry, who, man, you get to see as they're going up on the great elk hunt, you get to see him saying goodbye to his just adorable children. And he's really stoked about it. And they understand the risks. And these are, at this point, battle hardened apocalyptic badasses. And they're all soberly saying, yeah, we want to get this projector bulb because we want to make this.
Yeah.
This fair, you know, we want something besides the world's greatest bicycle powered washing machine to gawk at. We want this to be, you know, like the kingdom. I don't know. Like, is that? I wonder if the deal is the kingdom's chief export is their culture.
Hmm. Yeah,
you know,
and their morale.
Like if you can invite the whole all the communities to see an old world movie. I mean, then when the kingdom needs antibiotics and some ears of corn, people are going to be like, hey, you know, maybe we should give it to him, because none of us are crazy enough to go fucking get a projector out of the... who does that? Who does that?
It's unfortunate the only reel of film they have is Night of the Living Dead. But, you know, you play what you got at the fair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's relatable. It's relatable to people. The people for like sure. that kind of stuff. I also love how they're playing the It's All Right Now by Eddie Harris, and like everybody, regardless of their age, sex, or race, is like getting the groove on, except for Carol, who's just kind of like side eyeing left, right. Who are these crazy people?
It's a jam,
I fucking
man.
Love it. It is. I know. But Carol's just she's so fucking grounded, man.
Yeah.
She's a crazy lady that spent a whole year in a cabin talking to nobody but herself. So
true. I gotta say, I don't agree with the waste of batteries. They must have gone through what, 4-6 D cell batteries, just as a distraction. You could have set up a wind chime. You could have had somebody on a horse go lead him away. You know,
it doesn't get everybody limber and loose.
That's
doesn't
true.
Get the, doesn't get the Jerry's groove back.
Jerry could have done a mean acapella version, I'm sure.
Jerry's gonna have to do surgery up in that projector room. You need him loose and limber.
That's true. It all does feel a little too real for me right now, though, with the coronavirus shutdown. It's like, this theater has been disused, and there are a bunch of rotting corpses in it. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, in the middle of next year, when you go back to the Cineplex, it's going to look just like that. There's going to be thick cobwebs. You're going to have to clean the corpses of the people who were captain tripped behind back in the spring and summer of 2020. It's going to be a wild experience.
Yeah, can't wait. All right, the dead show up at Hilltop, and Alpha decides to keep him circling for now. Daryl has decided to make the trade. Unfortunately, Henry snuck into the jail and released Lydia. The community searches for them, and Daryl uses his dog to track Henry.
Which is cool. All that stuff, like, I thought dog was kind of, like, gratuitous, but hey, you know, he paid off in this episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like that the deaf woman in the cornfield is kind of like their ace in the hole. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, like all this stuff, like, hey, man, this all makes sense. And it has something cool for her to do. Like Luke's able to communicate with her privately that no one else knows. She comes up clutch here in the next couple scenes and provides like a, you know, well, I guess we'll wait to praise that when I get there. But none of this stuff is infuriating. Like,
shockingly, I know.
Like a grown ass person doing the shit that Henry does would be infuriating, but sure. Henry, like, he is uniquely, like, this is his character. He's young, he's full of testosterone, he's been raised on a steady diet of King Ezekiel's bullshit and optimism and idealism
and Morgan's
and being a
bullshit.
yeah, like all of this stuff has molded him into this like wretchedly naive character. So like, it's infuriating, but it also is exactly what this character would do, and it feels very believable.
And they did a good job, foreshadowing this turn from Henry, because, they had him with those teens, right, putting down that walker and not giving a shit what they thought about it and just going and doing it. So it feels very in character.
Yeah, yeah. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what 2-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
You
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
All right, outside the gates, the baby causes problems for the Whisperers who are trying to control the dead. It's crying. The walkers want to eat it. Rather than save the baby, they let the dead have it for natural selection reasons.
I don't think there's got to be very... Lydia's probably the youngest person in this group because...
Yeah. Well, it's what we talked about, you know. This is the thing. Walking Dead this season has been doing this every time we talk about a problem that, you know, inevitably will come from the things they've shown us. They're kind of addressing it, and it's a weird feeling while watching The Walking Dead to have all of my concerns and questions answered or addressed almost immediately.
Yeah, and I remember how we talked about not liking the fact that they'd always, Judith was always just something to and be put in danger to, like, get these cheap emotional moments out of. Sure. And this felt different because, you know, it's a natural outgrowing of what you would expect from these Whisperers. And it really set them up to just in a way that is like even more effective than Negan beating Glenn to death. Mm-hmm. Cause that was, you know, as vicious as that was, it was a consequence that, you know, the community kind of more or less earned by their defiance of Negan. This is instantly makes you think, okay, like these Whispers are just fucking, they're inhuman.
Yeah.
This alpha person is maniacal. Like, who the fuck does this? Your natural selection. There is like, the evolution doesn't work that way, lady. But it's also kind of like, well, what should the mother have done? You know, like made the child black out. Like held. It's like there's nothing but inhuman responses to this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a baby is incompatible with that scenario, right?
Yeah.
And this is why you need that scenario, because you're pretending to be the dead. And, you know, for whatever we would say about, you know, Judith being the crying baby MacGuffin problem thing, this is 10 times worse because they have nowhere to go and they can't run either. Running would just exacerbate the problem. So, yeah.
And also they end up giving the baby, I think, to the blacksmith family, which neatly kind of completes their arc. They lost their son earlier this season, which robbed them a lot of their, like, I got the feeling that a lot of the blacksmith's problem is that he's got nothing really to live for other than his work. Maybe now, like, he'll find a better balance and be able to, you know, get, you know, rest up and continue to serve the community. Now that he's got something beyond just like, well, I got to make these damn horseshoes kind of thing. It serves a lot of purposes, and it just shows. I'm just saying this is a writer's room that gave a shit. Yeah. Like, they came into the season with a whiteboard and post-it notes and actually spent more than a few sloppy lunch sessions planning things out. Like, wow, these are things that were set in motion, and then a time jump happened, and then these characters were all over and reshuffled the deck. But, like, we thought, relax, everybody. We're not writing this week to week. We've actually thought about this shit, and it's so refreshing. So refreshing.
Okay, Daryl's dog finds the Henry and Lydia escape route, which is this fake log tunnel, which I cannot believe. No one knew this was out here. No one. Okay.
I don't know, because Daryl makes a beeline. Well, no, I guess the dog led him to it.
And he's like, what the fuck? What is this thing? And then nobody has answers. The teen girl who partied with Henry before, I think her name is Addie, tells Daryl and Enid that she knows where he probably took her. And Enid decides to go with her while Daryl deals with the dead at the gates. Connie, trapped outside the gates, decides to move in to save the baby. She snatches it, ducks into the cornfield, where she gets stuck in a herd until Daryl and her friends come to save her.
Yeah, this is, man, we've made fun of stealth zombies for good reason, but this deaf woman being stuck in this corn maze with zombies both living and dead all around her was like a legit horrific scenario that they'd done just enough for with these fucking new guys to make me care, especially, you know, woman comes out, guns, you know, I guess slingshots blazing to save a baby. I'm already kind of invested in her.
Yeah.
But like, holy hell, what a set piece. What a really unique, inventive set piece that makes full use of this character and shows their inherent bravery and nobility. And just when things got grim, like the catharsis of seeing like Daryl crash through saving the day, and then like all of Hilltop's like, fuck this, we're going balls out for it. It's great. A lot of heart in the scene.
Yeah. I really like the sound design in this particular scene as well. Like you mentioned, you know, she's deaf, and so she can sort of hear general noises, but they're very muddy. It's hard to tell where they're coming from, and it adds to the confusion and the fear in that situation.
You really felt the vulnerability, like even though she's a very competent, badass person in this environment, it's very claustrophobic and paranoia inducing in the audience as well as the heroine here. Well done, well conceived piece.
All right, Jerry finds a bulb in the projector and he begins extraction. Ezekiel asks for his side mission, which is pulling down a frame for the charter so it can be signed at the fair. Carol doesn't want him to get his hopes up that Michonne will show at the fair. And then she suggests they talk to Jesus about taking them in if things don't improve at the kingdom. He assures her that he's considered all possible outcomes. At the same time as the boombox dies, the walkers who have been stuck in the theater break loose and begin to breach their defenses. And Jerry drops the bulb and says, dang. conclusion coming up in one of the next scenes, but it's not broken.
You know, we talked about this a little bit pre-podcast. It does seem like things in the Hilltop are a little bit more dire. I thought that this earlier in the season they established that the Hilltop's infrastructure was in fact breaking down.
Oh, Kingdom.
You know, it's being held. Kingdom, I'm sorry, yeah. Not Hilltop. Kingdom. The infrastructure, you know, like there's these pipes bursting and they had to repair them with like duct tape and baling twine. And Henry joining the blacksmith and Hilltop, I thought was a way. I thought they were telling a story of like maybe Hilltop has a little bit more, too much warrior, too much King Ezekiel's bullshit and not enough like technicians and like engineers. They don't have enough Jerrys. They don't have enough, not Jerry. They don't have enough Eugenes. They don't have enough blacksmiths. And Henry going to train was some kind of, way to avoid that dark future. But I don't know. Carol seems a little bit more pessimistic that like,
yeah, they might like, very soon have to abandon that community altogether.
Yeah, how?
I don't understand, because like, what does infrastructure even mean in the apocalypse? Like, okay, you got a few pipes that are burst, but certainly you could carry water via buckets or something water your crops if the irrigation's a problem. Or like, nobody's got, I mean, yeah, they probably have indoor plumbing, but you don't need indoor plumbing to survive. I'm just thinking, like, where are the choke points that make this community completely inviable? Because their infrastructure is crumbling.
Maybe there isn't a source of water inside the walls. They have to pump it from outside, and that could be...
Maybe.
You know, but maybe they should be building some walls out to some well so they can, you know, have a protected source of water. But I don't know. It's interesting. Because, yeah, like, it seems like you could just loan some blacksmith or some material. There's got to be tons and tons of, like, just raw build. Like, think about, like, all the shit you can scrounge from a Home Depot.
Oh, yeah.
Or a Lowe's that wouldn't have, you know, like, I'm sure plywood and all that kind of stuff is, like, the first to go in a zombie apocalypse, and maybe nails. But, like, how much fucking pipe and PVC and stuff must be available? Yeah, yep. It seems like you could, maybe they don't have the technical expertise, but I would love for them to explore that more.
I mean, I'm certain they don't have that. I've seen the blacksmith at work.
It seems like, you know, if you want to live like, you know, old frontier days, all you really need is walls, which the kingdom has, and people willing to defend them. So,
and their crops, what is the deal? Fine. I mean, they make it apparent that they need this elk, because Ezekiel's like, oh, that might be enough to feed us all. But I don't know. I was under the impression, looking at all of the gardens and stuff inside of the walls of the kingdom, that they had food.
Yeah, I mean, like, enough. When you went over to see the sanctuary, it's very easy to see how that community could collapse because nothing was going to grow. But, like, the hilltop does seem to be thriving. Yeah, I'd like to find out more about their infrastructure problems.
Me too. I know this isn't new, but I wanted to bring it up again because I like it. They've named all these herds. This one is called Alfred, which, I don't know. It's just a cool idea that we would name herds in the apocalypse. The one a little, like, slightly unbelievable thing is that Jerry would somehow have, in the apocalypse with all these bored teenagers around, a roll of unpopped bubble wrap that he could wrap this thing in. Because I don't know about you, first time I see, first thing I do when I see unpopped bubble wrap is I grab it and I start popping the bubbles.
Yeah. See, that's article. We didn't go over article 9 because I didn't think it'd come up in a podcast. Mm. But bubble wrap is a precious resource, and the penalty for popping it is solitary confinement. So, it's
maybe that's the infrastructure problem that the kingdom is having. They just don't have enough bubble wrap.
They don't. Yeah, if you need to pack and ship safely, secure. I did like just so you know that, like, what Jerry was saying about those projector bulbs is absolutely true.
Yeah,
like a single fingerprint. These bulbs have so much wattage going through that glass that any obstruction can superheat that glass and cause it to shatter. Yeah. And once it shatters, the filament burns out almost instantly. So, I don't know, even with it shrouded in bubble wrap, you could drop it three stories into a pit full of zombies and it would survive. But
this is the thing.
Like, I actually was super happy to see him don the surgical gloves and be like, this is, like, you got to be really careful about these things, because that's right on.
The thing is, I just don't care that much. Like, that's the problem here is, like, I'm not totally bought into the morale argument of needing this bulb to survive the zombie apocalypse. So, like, when Jerry drops it, I'm just like, just let it go, man. Let it go. It's not that important. You know, you got the frame. You're going to have your grand ceremony anyway. Forget about the bulb. And they're trying to establish, like, all this tension over this bulb. And I'm like, okay, I guess. So then Lydia changes into some human clothes and begins to manifest Stockholm syndrome toward her mother. Henry hears Enid and Addie outside and goes to talk to him. And Enid explains the hostage situation to him, tells him he can live with this bad decision that he's got to make if he just doesn't think about it. And then Lydia comes out of the house and volunteers to go back to her people. She kisses Henry, says, okay.
Yeah. And they even brought Just Survive somehow back. Like, you know, Enid hasn't been with us that long.
Got a JSS, baby.
But her, like, experience of dealing with these traumatic incidents and her personal experience of wrestling through it and Carl helping her do so. There's something to be said by having a couple characters around that you've been a few seasons with. It's like, you know, like as much fun as it is to have some no name come on and you give them a fluff job of like a minute or two of backstory and then you kill them and have everybody shed tears. Like, you really do get something special out of having characters. Even, I wouldn't think that Enid is even that particularly well-written character. And I remember at the time thinking the JSS was kind of dopey. Mm-hmm. But, like, you get a few seasons in a rearview mirror and it's kind of getting fuzzy. Like, this shit, yeah. Like, they're making the most out of what they got.
Sure.
They're using every part of the Enid, including the JSS. I like it.
This kiss, I know it's significant for Henry. And it may very well be his first, but I just couldn't help but thinking how gross it must be to kiss the mouth of a girl who has legit probably not brushed her teeth since she was a baby. Like, I don't know when you find the time. to brush your teeth when you're walking amongst the dead. But yeah, that's got to be less than the perfect kiss, I imagine.
Yeah, and it's too bad because Henry just was not raised to deal with this real politics scenario. It's not what his honor code demands. It's not what his PP wants. It's like everything in his every fibers of his being is unaligned with this decision, which plays out like you'd think.
All right, Daryl and Alpha make the hostage trade, and Lydia apologizes to her mother, who immediately slaps her and tells her to call her Alpha like all the rest. And then they all turn and leave.
Such a powerful illustration, though. Like, Boston Rob and the professor get hugged and fawned over, and everyone greets them as if they were missed and treasured individuals, and she gets a slap for saying mom instead of Alpha. And there you go, Lydia.
Seems like the
duality of man.
Everything is resolved here, right? There's not going to be any more troubles with the Whisperers. Everybody gets what they want. Everybody's happy. They go home.
I feel like the story of the Whisperers might be internal collapse, because I got to think the zombies walking around in the field seeing one mother forced to abandon her child versus the lengths that this community will go to save a child that's not even theirs, and how they would play some brinksmanship to retain a person that's not theirs too. Like, that's got to... Like, there's no one on the hilltop that's like, oh, you know what? That Whisper Society looks pretty interesting, looks pretty good. But there's got to be a lot of Whisperers thinking, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. You drop a few pamphlets out there that says, hey, we got a doctor. It's game over for the Whisperers. They're all going to come to the hilltop.
That's what I'm...
Yeah, propaganda. Yeah. Let's get some propaganda bombing on these Whisperers.
Yeah.
We can
like
change their mind.
They always said... In the Cold War, the best American propaganda was just a photo of a supermarket.
Yeah, full of food.
And here in the zombie apocalypse, the best propaganda is like a picture of a family eating dinner quietly by candlelight with a baby at a table with strong walls and people that love them protecting them, like
not wearing the skin of the dead. Yeah,
not wearing. Yeah, you can. We have a dentist in here.
Okay, Jerry reports his fuck up to Ezekiel, who decides it's not worth going into the theater full of walkers. Right on, Ezekiel. I'm with you. Because the herd is closing in, like, everything is coming to a head here. They need to get out. But Carol chimes in to say, hey, we should go for it. Having fully bought into his morale arguments. And they do. And their victory gives Ezekiel hope. This is good. I was so happy to see... that they're treating our badasses as badasses.
Yeah. Like when Carol was given the pep talk, like, hey, you know, we'll use the aisles or the seats to funnel them into the kill zones, and we'll do this and that. And like, that's exactly the numbers. Like, you know, we got a lot of dudes out here and there's only 40 in there. Like, I do wonder why Carol, because she unironically assumes the mantle of queen in this episode. Which she's resisted for a long time.
Well, it's an assumption of convenience, let's say. Like, she's the queen when it suits her.
That's true. But I do wonder why she decided to... I don't know. Maybe she thought Ezekiel needed to win. She's just being a supportive partner.
I mean, maybe she thinks everybody needs to win, right?
Yeah, yeah. I do think that's the one part of the story they haven't told it very well. The fact that the kingdom is kind of, like, on the ropes.
Yeah.
To where they would want to make some kind of desperation like this. But
and apparently on the ropes. Like, that's the thing. The stuff that we were hearing about this earlier was much earlier, right?
Yeah,
like,
I'm not sure
if
it was a year.
Jesus were talking about being taken in. And that whole thing was happening with the kingdom crumbling, and maybe they need to be taken in. But I thought this was later, judging by Carol's
hair. Right.
Maybe I'm misremembering.
No, I think you're right. Like there's at least a year that's passed. But it's weird because we had a 6-year time jump. And at some point between that and here, like, the communities have kind of fallen apart and had a falling out. There's scars on backs. There's this, Daryl's going to go on and talk about this time of desperation where he was some kind of heroic figure. But I also don't think that this is like in a distant past. Like, this Cold War between the communities feels like it's recent-ish, like a, you know, maybe a year ago, but not like three years ago. But we'll see. We'll see.
They show a symbol on a sign here as they walk past, which I assume has something to do with the Whisperers, but I'm honestly not sure. It looks like an A, where if you move the cross of the A up to the top and made it sort of a T on top of an A.
Yeah, like a fucked up pie symbol.
Sure. Yeah.
I wonder.
I don't know what it means.
Because the Whisperer said that, like, you had entered our territory, which, whatever the hell, yeah. What does that even fucking mean to them? I do, yeah, I don't know. Or maybe it's another faction. Does this have to do with the helicopter people?
Maybe.
But you're supposed to notice it. You're supposed to notice it, and we did. There you go, show. Can't ask any more from us than that.
All right, Henry's practicing his staff moves. They're sweet when Daryl walks by. And he tells Daryl he gets it, but it's not cool what they did to Lydia. Daryl says, live with it. Live with it, kid. And Henry asks how he can live with it as how Daryl can live with it as a survivor of abuse. Daryl says, the world is shit and you just live with it. Like, nobody's really giving him much advice other than suck it up, kid. Which, what can you say? What can you do?
Daryl's got the new JSS. The world's just shit sometimes. You know?
Right. He's not wrong.
Yeah, you got to just survive somehow because the world's just shit sometimes, and that's all you can do. And they make this oblique reference to Alexandria. I know what you did to help, and Daryl's like, "No, you don't. I had to do what I had to do, just like I did today. We all did." I am really, really looking forward to seeing what the fuck happened that can justify all this bad blood between the family.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, like, I don't have to look very hard to see examples in my own personal life where people have had fallings out over stupid shit. So, yeah. Like, I am prepared to accept this being some petty, you know, certain point of view. If everyone just sit down and have a talk and realize the importance, like, that can apply to so many situations today. So, like, I'm not going to be too disappointed if it's stupid. But I'm really curious to find out what it is.
And I like how they juxtapose these last two scenes. They've got the scene of Daryl telling the kid that the world is shit and sometimes and you just have to deal with it. And then they've got this next scene, which is Ezekiel, you know, his mission having succeeded, the morale of the community being boosted by this bulb that they got. And there's a hopeful note to it at the end of this episode that I really appreciated.
Yeah, the montage with Jerry playing with his adorable kids and his wife and the blacksmith and you know, got a new family and they're kind of like doting over this baby. And then you've got Henry rolling around in his bed of angst. And
I mean, he's kind of he's trying to make sense of all this and I get it. He's trying to live with it. He's failing. He leaves this note for Daryl, who then takes off to go after him and Connie goes with him.
I'm digging. This is a cool road show. Like
Connie and Daryl.
Daryl and Connie. Yeah. Like the strong, silent types. I'm just really curious to see what happens with this, because Daryl is kind of isolated. You know, he's always has Carol to lean on, but he feels like pretty much isolated from everybody else, and he's got this kind of like, I don't know, cool uncle vibe he's got going on with Henry, but he needs more friends, more people to invest in, and if Connie can be that person, I think that would be really cool. And I also just like how, you know, he's like, no, you're not going with me. And she's like, yeah, I am. He's like, why? And she just, you know, I can't live with it either. And that's the thing. Like, is how much of Daryl going out for after Henry is because he's Carol's loyal friend and he cares about her son? How much of it is it that he can't live with it either?
I feel like it's all the above.
Yeah, it's probably equal mix because you can tell, like, turning her over to that mother and that mother being viciously slapping her right off the bat, like, that had to stick in his craw so hard.
Yeah, I wonder if there's an opportunity for him to get her back to the community.
I think so.
While he's out here.
Which might lead to all-out war. I don't know how you beat directed hordes. With the limited firepower and things that they have at their disposal, because I think Daryl's bluffing about we got enough firepower to light you up. I mean, I'm sure you can defend yourself. Yeah, I mean, How much firepower? Do they got enough firepower to dispatch 40, 50 people? Sure.
Well, I think they took everything 100. That Sanctuary had, right? And they, I think, had stockpiles.
Yeah. And maybe that's why they're rolling around with spears and whatnot, is because, like, you know, their principal threat at this point is the dead, and they save all that for the living. But, yeah,
well,
I mean,
it's been 6 years, so maybe they've run out of those stockpiles.
Yeah, because even if you're making your own bullets, like, you'll eventually run out of brass and lead and gunpowder. And I know, like, you know, Kirk made gunpowder on that one planet out of fucking sulfur and charcoal and shit. But I don't think it's that easy.
Yeah.
You know, like, unless you go back to muzzle loaders and stuff and, like, lower quality propellants. But, like, yeah, you will eventually run out of even the raw materials to make bullets. And then what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You're relying on a blacksmith to copy spears, apparently.
Well, I don't know what Ezekiel did to this charter, if he maybe had to snip off a couple of articles on the sides, if maybe he had to, like, I don't know, fold it under so you can only read, you know, part of each paragraph, but it fits this frame perfectly, like a glove. It's such a coincidence. Yeah. I don't know how it's possible, but it does.
Well, you know, constitutions are a particular size, you know?
Are they? I didn't know that.
Huh. yeah they're the actual size of paper, just like in Nick Cage's National Treasure. They fit in a poster tube, they fit in poster frames just so.
Where do I buy constitutional paper? Is that just like, can I go down to Walmart and get a sheet or two?
I think you got to go I was trying to think of, like, what, Freedom Hall.
go to Nick Cage's house. I'm sure he has a few left over from filming.
He'll sell you some vellum, poster size vellum for sure. Yeah, that's the ticket.
Okay, that's the end of the episode, which it I think is the end of the podcast. But I don't know. What do you got?
No, that's it. I am really enjoying this episode. There's the last two or three, it's been kind of tough not to just go ahead and watch the next one.
Oh my God.
I'm doing
oh
it for
my
the
God.
Sake of the podcast.
What a change. What a difference a year makes. What a difference an entirely new writing staff makes.
Yeah, it really, and it's one of those things where it's like, I love it, but also, like, man, it's so frustrating that they let Scott Gimple run this shit into the ground, reassign him to Fear the Walking Dead, which by all accounts ran that promising franchise. Like, they had kind of righted the ship and got things going and invested, and then they ran it into the ground. Like, what the fuck? Get this guy, you know, relegate him to the junior writing staff again, and maybe he can do some good. But, but yeah, this season so far has been excellent. I can't wait to see. I'm invested in it. You know, like, I'm going to recommend that if you've liked the podcast at this point, you ought to actually try out the episodes. They're pretty fun watches. They're really easy, kind of popcorn watches. They're not offensive. There is some funny, goofy stuff in it, especially in the early goings. But yeah, it's a pretty good time. But we'll be back next week with the next episode, of course. We'll also be back at the end of the season for some more feedback. If you want to send that to us at watchingdead@baldmove.com, we'll be doing that. You can also discuss it with your fellow fans on our forums, forums.baldmove.com, if you care to do so. But yeah, we'll be back next week with another issue, episode of The Walking Dead, another issue, another episode of The Walking Dead. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you later.